Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Neuralink patient number one, Corey Nachreiner.
You'll never get Elon Musk to install something in my brain.
Insert that computer in my brain now. I want to think like Google.
On today's
episode...
Give
me machine learning.
At least then you'll have some learning.
Oh,
on today's episode... we cover a few interesting news stories from the Android ecosystem.
What kind of stories, again, are these? Hey.
I have the best words, okay?
I need to go talk to HR.
And then we talk about a new form of biometric authentication. Let's go ahead and hop on in with our clothes fully on. So today we have another news roundup for you guys, and the first two news stories are actually somewhat related. Let's start with the first one that just came up today, at least today as we're recording this, where Google just announced that they're taking bigger steps towards cracking down on Android malware, and they just announced that they're... You laugh. Why do you laugh?
They've been trying to keep malware off the Play Store for, what, 5 years now? And didn't they add vetting at least 5 years ago? Anyways,
well, now they really care.
I'm glad they're taking more steps.
So Google's announcement today was that they just started a new partnership with three of the leading mobile security app vendors, ESET, Lookout, and Zapierium, to form what they're calling the App Defense Alliance. Now, really what this means is the alliance members, so those three vendors and Google, will have direct access to the Google Play Protects screening system in order to share malware samples, basically. So there's threat intelligence sharing between these vendors now to hopefully help the, what do they call it, the potentially harmful app issue that they've been having on the Google Play Store.
Yep.
So users will also be able to report potential malware to this new alliance now also to try and crack down on it. My first take from this is it still seems like a bit of a cat and mouse game where they're relying on catching stuff that's there as opposed to proactively keeping stuff off. Do you agree with that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this doesn't seem to be like vetting. This seems to be more like adding other people's threat intelligence for malware detection, right? I mean, from what I understand of like, let's pivot to Apple App Store vetting. I think there's a human involved for that kind of thing, and they even look at source code in many cases, although I'm sure they have automated tools to speed that up and help. But this seems more like it's just, you know, one, crowdsourcing people reporting things and using those three malware vendors to get extra intelligence.
Yeah,
like
so
you
from
say,
my understanding,
that's reactive, not proactive.
Yeah, the Google Play Protect... a feature that I don't remember when it came out, but it's relatively recent within the last few years, does claim to scan all apps from the App Store as they're downloaded onto your phone. By scanning, though, I'm assuming they look for signatures of known malware as opposed to, like you said, Apple, they audit
protection
for potential malicious stuff instead of Google just scanning for known signatures. So a lot of things will still probably slip through the cracks.
Yeah, the vetting I'm talking about with like this is something that happens when a customer downloads something from Google Play, and it's just a malware scan on what the customer downloads. The way I interpret Google Play Protect, the vetting I'm talking about that happens on Apple is more about the application submission process. It's when the developer gives Apple the app before they even publish it. So Google probably has that too. I mean, if I remember right, Google does have some vetting. But this Google Play Protect seems just like malware protection, if you ask. I mean, just typical signature type, hash type malware protection.
Yep. And another bit of a drawback for it is it only works on apps that are downloaded from the App Store. And as we'll highlight here in our next news story, a lot of malware these days, it doesn't come from the App Store. Obviously, some does, but much of it is really sideloaded, where attackers will use social engineering to trick someone into checking that checkbox that allows them to load apps from untrusted sources and then install basically malware onto their phone, bypassing the App Store entirely. So this new alliance won't protect against that.
No, and as we always recommend against that, unless you're really a power user and know what you're doing. But I actually think this needs to be looked at because, you know, normally our advice is to avoid those third-party app stores and download from Google Play, because at least you have a fighting chance that it's safe. But if Google Play, granted, I think they say only 0.04% of the apps have ever been infected by anything bad. Granted, when there's millions of apps, that's probably still a pretty high number. But the point I'm trying to say is we still want Google's Play Store to be clean. It's kind of hard to give advice that, hey, don't sideload, go to Google Play and you'll be good, if it turns out that Google Play is also distributing bad stuff. So I'd like to see them do more on like proactively vetting the applications that people are developing. Granted, it's hard for them. I mean, one thing users might like about Google's ecosystem is they're very kind of open and transparent, letting anyone develop, not putting many limitations on what you can do. Whereas Apple has a lot more strict, from even a consumer level, ideas of what a developer is allowed to do on the platform, what types of apps are allowed, what SDKs are exposed. So there's good and bad from that, from a consumer standpoint. But the long and short of it is Apple can be much more aggressive on proactively vetting source code, you know, not just scanning for malware when users are downloading things, but making sure that, you know, some bad actor developer is not uploading bad crap.
And you bring up a good point, and it's something that Google's actually covered previously, and that there are some apps that'll be classified as a potentially harmful app that they'll still allow onto the App Store intentionally, because they provide some benefit towards users that knowingly download them. And specifically, they mentioned apps that are designed to help root your phone or unlock it, where that functionality is, it's dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. It is potentially harmful in some contexts, but in the case of some of these apps, people want to be able to root their phone, and so they can download them from the App Store. So they'll still be allowed, even with this new alliance they have.
Yep. It's nice that they get more threat intelligence, but to me, this is just extra malware protection.
It is at least a step in the right direction, I think.
Yeah. I'd like to see them do more work. Like a while back, they announced, I think in April of this year, that they're going to do more to vet the submissions from first-time Android developers. And I know they have some machine learning they do that run against submitted apps as well. So I'd still like to see them proactively do this before users even download, or before they even publish something new on the store, or let a developer publish something new on the store.
I'd agree with that. I guess, like, if we look at the silver lining, we all tend to, when we think of Android, think of mobile phones, but there's actually a lot more than mobile phones that run on Android too. So this does provide at least a little bit more protection towards even like the IoT space. Like, so many smart TVs today run off Android. Crap, our water cooler in our office is an Android tablet, basically. So at least, like, it is a minimal step forward that, if it is, even if it isn't perfect, it might still provide some additional protection to some of these devices too, which is good. But like
said,
I hope that they focus a little more on making it even better when they can.
Yep.
So moving on to our next news story here,
is sideloading so bad, Mark?
Exactly. So just this last week, Symantec, who, by the way, did you know that Symantec sold their brand off to Broadcom and rebranded themselves to Norton now?
No.
Yeah, so when we talk about Symantec, it's not actually Symantec. Now it's Broadcom's taking. Anyway, it was an interesting news story I read today. Anyways, so Symantec just released an update on research on a really highly persistent Android malware called X-Helper. That's primarily affecting users in India, the United States, and Russia. And X-Helper
isn't
exactly new.
This isn't new, though, right? I mean, you mentioned Symantec, but I think I heard about this at least a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, back in August, actually, Malwarebytes released an analysis on it when they found that they had removed it from 33,000 devices that were running their Malwarebytes anti-malware engine. Not a part of the alliance? So a bit of history on X-Helper. It's an app that looks like it makes its way onto devices as a Trojan. So users sideload an application off of an untrusted source. That application is tainted with some malicious code, that then goes and downloads and installs this X-Helper application. And once installed, it actually sets itself up as a service instead of an app. So when you're developing an Android application, there's a few different ways that you can have it show up on a device. Long story short, an app gets an icon somewhere in your launcher. A service kind of runs in the background, but still has much of the same functionality. So with X-Helper, it's set up to run as a service, meaning that there's no app in your launcher. So it kind of makes it a little more difficult to see there, at least from a user perspective.
But it's even worse than that, right? I mean, what this was known for, even in the Malware Bytes days, is the uninstallable Android malware.
Exactly. So first off, once it sets itself up, it does not matter if you get rid of that original Trojanized app. X-Helper is still on your system there to stay. But more frighteningly is that there have been a whole bunch of user reports where even factory resetting the device that was infected doesn't remove this X-Helper malware. And both Malwarebytes and Symantec have basically said they don't exactly know how that keeps happening. They don't necessarily think it's phones themselves coming preloaded with malicious software on them, but it's interesting that, I mean, they're two pretty big research companies and anti-malware companies, and they found this really persistent piece of malware, and they're not quite sure how it keeps sticking around on phones past reboots or past resets.
Well, yeah, people should know that refactoring and resetting your phone usually wipes out the entire data partition and reloads with a fresh image of the firmware. So it should almost be like deleting everything from the hard, you know, granted it's a memory chip, not a hard drive, but, you know, synonymous to deleting crap from your hard drive. So that's really strange. It is strange that they don't know how it happens. It is synonymous. I mean, this type of malware does exist for PCs. There is BIOS malware on PCs that we've seen before. BIOS malware, besides infecting Windows or whatever, will do a small firmware update to your the software running on your BIOS. There's actually a firmware there, and it can actually hide a version of itself in the BIOS. So even if you remove Windows, reboot, all that crap, you know, the BIOS can be used to then reinstall the malware. So I wonder if it's, you know, I don't know enough about Android and mobile socks to know how their bootloaders work, but I wonder if it's similar to PC BIOS malware.
Could be. It still could also be a compromised pre-installed app. Like I think we've even talked about on this podcast a few months ago, research into pre-installed applications on mobile phones that might be tainted with malware or vulnerable to malware injection. But the good news, I suppose, is as of right now, X-Helper isn't actually that destructive to the device. All it does is it, annoyingly, it's used for pop-up ads and click spam. So trying to get you to visit sites that then get them referral payments for getting you to click and then pop up. So the really annoying stuff, but the stuff that isn't going to at least delete all of your data. The bad news, though, is it does at least have functionality to install other applications on the device. So it could at any point pivot and start installing like ransomware on phones without any warning whatsoever.
That doesn't sound fun.
No, it does not. Understatement of the century. And really, so the main infection point that both Malwarebytes and Symantec highlighted were sideloaded applications that were basically Trojans.
And I hear a lot of a few times today. Shady video game sites. Like, in other words, there's, like any other software underground, there's an underground for free pirated Android apps, which these pirated Android apps sometimes come with something that makes them not quite free. So be careful of shady third-party, you know, Android game sites out there.
There's no such thing as free, especially when it comes to software that normally costs money.
For sure.
And I think we saw some good examples of this. Like a really good example was Super Mario Run was an Android app developed by Nintendo that was really popular. But like a lot of apps, it was slowly released across specific regions and not globally all at once. And so let's say it was released in like Australia and Japan first. If people in the United States or Canada wanted to play it, their only option was to try and find it from a third-party source. And oftentimes those third-party sources install their own malware within the code. It's pretty easy to decompile something, inject whatever you want, and then recompile it and host it on your site when it comes to Android malware.
Yep, yep, classic trick.
So be safe when sideloading apps. Just don't do it unless you know exactly what you're doing and where that app is coming from and you're certain that it's entirely safe.
At the least, I guess, have a bunch of tools to scan APKs. There are tools that, I mean, no tool's perfect at finding malware all the time, but there's tools and sites out there that will allow you to submit an APK and do some analysis on it.
Yep. If you do want to see, so because it doesn't have an app icon, the only way to see if XHelper is running on your system is to go to, I think it's like your Android settings, and then under running applications, you can still see services. And it'll be there at the bottom called XHelper. If you do see it running, apparently you can't install it, so you might as well just throw your phone away and buy a new one.
Or wait for them really to just be... figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Or wait for them to figure it out. So our final news story was a real fun one that I stumbled across that I'm sure Corey will have some opinions on, where a team of researchers from the Electronics and Telecommunications Research Institute out of South Korea just published a study in the IEEE Transactions of Cybernetics Journal, highlighting some research that they conducted into a new form of biometric authentication.
Cybernetics, you already have me interested.
I tried to throw in every buzzword I could find from here. It sounds really technical. It actually...
Well, let's research add is bioacoustics cool. to our technical jargon. We've never said that word before on our podcast.
Bioacoustics, yes. So Corey kind of hinted at it, where instead of reading like a fingerprint or doing face ID or scanning an iris, this research was revolving around equipment they created that generates a sound wave and vibrations, basically, that pass through the human body and then read the response from it. So different skin and bone and muscle structures and different people, they found generate unique signatures as sound waves bounce around inside of them. And they can use these unique signatures as a biometric for authentication. And really, this research revolved around something that you and I have already chatted about, where there's a bit of a weakness in current forms of biometrics, and that sometimes they rely on like these external features like our fingerprint or our eyeball or our face, which you can theoretically, or actually in practicality, reproduce.
Yeah, you can copy them in a not exact digital copies, but get a pretty close replication.
Like we saw, what was it, like a month after Face ID came out?
Not even. I think it was like 2 weeks. Back V, Vietnamese researchers created a 3D modeled face. They had to do some extra detail in the eyes, nose, and lips with some special printing processes too. But essentially a 3D model with some special printing got past Face ID 2 weeks after it was launched.
And that's Face ID, so that's a real good form still of biometric authentication. It's actually even worse on Google devices.
Yeah, we've shown
like
that.
You have a demo that you run where you use a picture of your wife from Facebook in order to unlock a phone using their facial recognition.
Yeah, I start with the actual like high-end photo I took on my iPad, but then I go to a Facebook profile photo, which is like a 640 by 480 highly digitized crappy photo, and even that was able to get past phones. And according to, if I remember right, some were they European researchers found out of 110 Android phones, 40 of them could be bypassed just with a simple picture, the same way I did it. And then the extra amount of them could be bypassed with a little more work with an animated picture for the phones that use blink protection. So it's not that hard to get past trusted, the type of Google trusted faces that only use the normal camera on your phone rather than some sort of 3D or depth camera.
And Samsung actually just released a patch for their higher end models of the Galaxy S10 that This current generation was using this ultrasonic way to read thumbprints within the screen itself. So there wasn't a hardware thumbprint reader on the phone. Instead, you could put it through the screen. But they found that phones that were using third-party screen protectors, their little ultrasonic system would read the crystalline structure of those screen protectors as the fingerprint.
No
matter what thumb you actually put on it, it would just read the screen protector, which was always the exact same, so it could unlock the phone with any person's finger, basically.
Assuming or if you stole the phone without the screen protector, just get the same model that has the same shape.
Exactly. Yep. So, I mean, that's what the researchers were pointing out, that a lot of these are, to varying degrees, easy to copy, but this new method they discovered, it relies on biometrics inside the human body, which I imagine it's got to be a little more difficult to map out my bone and muscle structure than a fingerprint.
Until we have Westworld-style 3D cloning printers, I think it's going to be hard for me to get your hand bones, your finger bones, and your muscles and ligaments. Maybe in the next 50 years we'll be able to print out a copy of Mark, but right now it's a little hard.
No one wants another copy of Mark.
I don't know. I could use five of you.
So the good news is, maybe not the good news, the accuracy of this technology right now isn't quite there. It's not up to the same standards as current fingerprint and iris scanners.
It's like 97% accurate, right?
Yeah. I mean, so it's good. But, it's not exactly like 10%, but it's still not as perfect as what some of the other methods are.
And I actually think 97% when you're doing something as far as validating a user is not, it sounds good, but it's technically not that good. 3% error rate in identifying a user as the right person is probably not great. And that doesn't have anything to do with, I'm sure they have issues with, what are the false positives are like. When you start to use these type of audio-based ones, I mean, they can be pretty accurate, but maybe they have to be a little more general in what they look at. So it'd be interesting to see the actual statistical details of false positives versus false negatives, etc., etc.
They did say they are going to try adding more sensors to try and boost its accuracy in their next study. Another thing they pointed out is that, the human body is basically constantly growing with cell death and cell growth. So they wanted to test to see would
your
biometric taken last year still work?
Yeah, your hand might change structure over time. Maybe you suddenly decide to invest in your piano skills and you get better finger muscles. I don't know. And the pattern changes. So obviously,
as part of the study, though,
go ahead.
They did test participants over 30-day intervals. I think it was like three different studies over the course of 90 days. And they did found that changes were gradual enough for it still to be accurate, which I imagine is still like pretty similar to Google Face ID's thing where, people obviously get older. And so they have to constantly retrain their model too. So once this does become practical, I imagine it's something you'll have to continue using to continue retraining over time.
Yeah, and by the way, practical, the one other reason this isn't that practical yet isn't just accuracy. If you look at any of the articles or write-ups that me and Mark are referring to, you can kind of see an image of the device they use, which is a bunch of big circuit boards. So this is not microized technology that you can put in a little tiny sensor in a phone yet. It's a pretty big breadbox project. So of course, over time that will happen. They'll find a way to make this tiny and easy to put somewhere. But right now it doesn't seem like it's ready to be in a consumer product.
Have you ever stuck your hand inside of a subwoofer?
It was on?
Yeah.
The echo chamber or something?
Yeah, the echo chamber. I'm imagining in 2049... since we already missed the first Blade Runner cutoff, since it's November 2019 right now, but maybe 2049, you walk up to a secure area in a building and you have to stick your hand inside this subwoofer thing so it can map out your bone structure to authenticate you and let you in.
By then you just step into a man trap and they'll do the same thing, but for your whole body. So your whole body has to be acoustically accurate.
Acoustically accurate for biometric authentication. Or who knows, maybe like Google just bought Fitbit. So maybe now like our Fitbits will constantly be buzzing and mapping our bone structure, and we can just walk up to a door and it'll unlock.
I already find the notifications on my iWatch irritating enough. I don't need my Fitbit vibrating at me anymore.
What is this Google notification on my iWatch? Why is it not Apple?
Anyways, this is a kind of neat technology. I do like the fact that it's not copied. I wonder if, you know, there's other ones like this. Typing cadence was something that was interesting. But if we're going back into biometrics, one I've always thought of was more accurate ECG or heart rate. And I think that's the type of thing that you can make small pretty quick. And I do hear things like our if you get really well measured heart rate or ECGs, they are pretty unique signatures for us. So it'd be interesting to see what new biometric wins out as something better than fingerprints and facial scans.
Probably Elon Musk's Neuralink.
Yeah, we'll just have something in our brain and we'll have a brain scan.
Yep. That would be weird. Like, how would you hack someone's brain and steal their Neuralink and then use that to authenticate? That gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Hey, he has a write-up. They have a picture of them inserting the sensors in the mouse's head. So
I will.
He's
never,
working on it now.
Look that up. But yeah, I agree. It's cool seeing new experiments into biometric authentication to try and make up for some of the shortfalls that do exist in current models. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that a thumbprint or an iris scan is you shouldn't use it because it can be copied. But we've talked about this before, where as a single factor, it doesn't necessarily make it more secure than like a password, but it's still a great factor in a multi-factor system.
Yeah, and the best thing about biometrics is usability. Whenever you have any sort of authentication, especially multi-factor, where you're adding some sort of quote-unquote friction, things that a user has to do, I would much rather just touch or look at something than have to type something long. So we argue don't use biometrics on their own, but they're perfectly safe as one of the factors you use for multi-factor, and they're definitely a good factor to use for their usability. They do make logging in easier.
I am looking forward to the future, though, where instead of typing in a password, I just have to listen to dubstep and my phone will authenticate me automatically.
Is that the sound they're going to use to map out your hand, dubstep?
Authentication by Skrillex. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, reach out to us on
Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves. Hold on. Is Ask Jeeves still a thing? Ask Jeeves.
I don't know. Let's look it up.
Jeeves.com. It was .com, right? Not .net. Oh, now it's just ask.com. I forgot they changed it.
Oh, Ask took over Ask Jeeves? Yeah. Oh, bummer.
That
I prefer
bummer.
Jeeves.
So, because you can no longer ask Jeeves, you can instead reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept. And the both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Cheerio! Pip, pip!
Okay, bye. I'm actually really sad. Ask Jeeves is gone.